What's up, everyone? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I am actually the one getting interviewed. My girlfriend, Adi Zucker, the owner of Working Against Gravity, interviews me. We talk about my family life, overcoming addiction, getting into CrossFit, competing, winning the games, starting Brute, all of that kind of stuff. So if you want to get to hear my story a little bit, check it out. Also, if you have time, please leave us a review by going to iTunes, Brute Strength Podcast. Give me some feedback. Hope you enjoy the show.
So this is a little bit of a different show today. My name is Adi Zucker, and I am Michael Cashew's girlfriend. And I also own a nutrition coaching company called Working Against Gravity. I'm also a weightlifter. And I decided that I'm going to put Michael in the hot seat and interview him on his own podcast for the first time.
We're both a little bit nervous.
Definitely. I mean, it's my first time interviewing anybody, so I'm a little nervous. And it's your first time being interviewed on your own podcast and by me.
Yep.
So this should be interesting. I will start with... Michael is a really interesting guy. He's got a really good story, so I think we should roll in and out of your story and fitness and business, and my goal today is to inspire as many people as possible. So how about we start with, you're from a city called New Roads in Louisiana, and how many people live in New Roads?
5,000, and it's really interesting. This is kind of a tangent, but it's 2,500, basically 2,500 white people, 2,500 black people, and it's almost completely split by a set of train tracks. So it's still a very like segregated community.
It's still like that? Mm-hmm. That's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. So in New Roads, your family still lives there?
Yep.
Your whole family? Family.
Probably 50 to 100 people. Extended family.
And they all live in New Roads still. And tell us a little bit about your family and what they're like and your relationship with them.
My extended family in general is super, super close. We do all holidays together. We do Sundays together as like big groups and stuff like that. My immediate family is just as close, and they are also very, very open-minded. Both of my parents are very smart, very driven people, goal oriented, and they instilled most, if not all, of what I would consider my best qualities. You know, they've taught me how to be a good person, they've taught me through the way they live, how to be humble, how to work hard, all of those kinds of things. So super close family. I don't know how, any other way.
Right. So you have this amazing family that taught you all these amazing things. For those of you that don't know, Michael found himself addicted to drugs. And
I just woke up one day and I found myself. I'm addicted.
Well, how do you... So most people would say that you meet somebody who's been an addict, who's been through rehab, they can generally attribute it to some traumatic experience they've had or a family relationship or something like that. What do you attribute getting yourself into that situation?
I think it started out as a combination of just trying to be cool. I was really young. I was, 9 years old when I took my first couple shots of whiskey. It was my 9th birthday, and that was just to be cool to some older kids that were at the birthday party. And, somewhere around then, I thought the bad kids were the cool kids, and I always wanted to be the cool kid. And so I would go to literally any lengths to be the cool kid. That just meant doing worse and worse drugs where I came from. Right, those were the bad kids. There were some kids that were shooting drugs in their arms, and eventually that's where it led me. Mixed with a little bit of boredom, I didn't find junior high, high school very challenging at all. So I think that probably has a little bit to do with it. And from there, it turned into like a physical addiction. I also have an addictive personality. So once I started using these really powerful painkillers and benzodiazepines and stuff like that, anybody can get addicted to those. Couple that with my addictive personality, it became a physical addiction, and it was a daily thing all day long for a few years there.
What do you think was your like rock bottom moment that changed it all?
My rock bottom moment did not come until after I had gone to rehab for about a year and a half.
And where did you go to rehab?
In Utah. So I spent a year and a half in different inpatient treatment centers as well as a transition house. And after about a year and a half, I had gained a lot of awareness about myself and about depression and anxiety and stuff like that, but I didn't have any purpose in life whatsoever. I didn't have any friends in Salt Lake City when I got out of rehab. A lot of the kids that I was hanging around weren't very driven, weren't very like into the things that I was into, right? They were smoking cigarettes, and a lot of them were drinking and using when they weren't supposed to be. And I wanted to play sports and study and make friends and all of that kind of stuff. So I got really, really lonely because I have no drugs to escape with anymore. And I have no friends in this brand new city where I don't really know anyone. So I isolated myself over a course of a couple months, and I relapsed really, really hard. Within the first day, I was smoking crack and smoking heroin, which is, I never smoked heroin before in my life. And the first day that I relapsed, I smoked heroin.
Wow.
Right? It was, and that's very common in the recovery community. Like, it comes back with a vengeance, right? And so it definitely did for me. I spent thousands of dollars over the course of this week. It was a 1 week span where I was using. Got myself into a lot of dangerous situations and, like apartments and parts of town that I would never dare go. And the worst for me was when I finally, a friend of mine actually wrote an article, I think it might be up today. A couple friends of mine called me out and basically turned me into the treatment center, and as well as my parents. And I was still, it hadn't been long enough to where I was like bad off enough to where I didn't want to quit. So it was early on enough where I was able to quit after a week. So the rock bottom for me was realizing I just went through a year and a half of treatment, and my family spent hundreds of hours probably sobbing and crying, and then they saw me recover and get better, and they see the light in my eyes again and stuff like that, and then I go and do this. Yeah, it was very, very emotional time. I think they were probably more scared than ever because I had just gone through some really, really good treatment facilities and I still can't stay clean, right? And I felt in that moment, I felt very strong and I felt like rejuvenated, but they didn't know that. And I could feel that from them. I could feel their fear and their disappointment, or really just fear and sadness, really. And that was it for me. I haven't used those drugs since then.
And since then, so your commitment after that, you're rejuvenated, you're motivated. What has kept you from that happening again? Was it going to AA meetings, or what was your practice to keep you?
Right after that, it was a combination of at least 1 hour a day of an AA meeting. So a lot of times I would go to two, as well as spending time working with other alcoholics, whether it be informally or formally via sponsorship. Couple that with all of the things I learned in therapy, which are, you know, different communication skills, simple things like being honest, meditation, trying to be present, right? All of those kinds of things.
Do you still need to do those kinds of things today?
Absolutely. And honestly, I kind of go, I've gone in waves over the past, what, I'm 25, over the past 7 years.
You're almost, right? 26.
Almost 26. So almost 8 years, right? I've gone in waves of really prioritizing, taking care of myself, right? Like emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and then not, right? And I'll focus on something else for a little while. Right now, I'm probably focusing on this kind of stuff more than ever. And when I say this kind of stuff, like working on personal growth, it is, yeah, it's absolutely what keeps me happy and free every day. And that's what did it for me then. It was just a different version. I feel like I've definitely evolved since then, and I have, you know, far more clarity and tranquility and stuff like that. But yeah, it's still a huge part of my life today.
So you went to rehab, relapsed, recovered again. You've been basically recovered ever since. And after you leave rehab, was it, when exactly did you find CrossFit and fitness? Like, do you remember the exact moment? Where was it, like something else and then it led you to CrossFit? How did that relationship start?
I'll never forget it.
Okay.
I had just run the Salt Lake City Marathon. And
you did you do that while you were in rehab? Like, because you have, you know, to train for a marathon, or you just went cold?
As soon as I got out of rehab, I started training, right? And I was fucking gung-ho about it. I ran every single day.
For the marathon.
Yeah, I did really well. And then I was completely burnt out on running. And I grew up playing sports. Like, I used to hate running. But that's all I knew how to do, or that's all I felt comfortable doing, right? Going right out of rehab. So right. I did that. I think right, like probably a month after that, I'm just like going to Gold's Gym or 24-Hour Fitness, not having a clue what I'm doing, and super bored, doing it all alone. And then I met this guy, Bryce Astell.
Were you just at the Gold's Gym just making up your own workouts, or like things you found online, or?
Oh, just what I used to do training for football, right?
Okay.
Bench press, back squat, front squat, some deadlifts, some power cleans. You know, functional movements for sure, but it was so, so boring. Yeah, it was really boring for me.
And so you meet Bryce at the gym?
No, I met Bryce through my chemical dependency counselor. He was in AA and he was a young guy, and there and my chemical dependency counselor was trying to hook me up with some young people to like go do outdoor activities, because she knew how much I wanted to get into that, how much I needed that. And I met Bryce and we became friends instantly. And then, as you know, we became best friends over time. But he said, hey man, why don't you come try out this thing, CrossFit, that I do. And I had literally never heard of it. And it was CrossFit NRG. And we did the workout Fight Gone Bad. And I was hooked. It was amazing. I had never felt anything like it. And I also was really bad at it. It was humbling. And I really wanted to not be bad at it. So that was kind of a driving factor. But probably a month later is when I relapsed. So I took some time off. So I did it for a month, something like that. Took some time off. And when I came back, probably in December of 2009, I was smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. I had started smoking after that marathon, which is incredibly ironic. And I kept smoking once I got sober again, because it was kind of just a vice, and I gave myself the excuse, like, it's better than using drugs, right? So I went into CrossFit again, smoking a pack a day, and I did a couple workouts. I'm like, I literally cannot do this anymore. One of these has to go. And I was having a really fun time doing CrossFit workouts. It was a really positive community, and I knew it was something really good for me, and I chose to give up cigarettes.
So it kind of sounds like cigarettes was like keeping you from relapsing, as like something for you to have as a vice. And then
CrossFit, yeah, for sure.
And then CrossFit kind of replaced that.
Yes. I mean, yeah, there's definitely, it's definitely a mixture of internal personal like tasks, like say getting over resentments, making amends, working and serving others, right? That's, you have to do that part for yourself. But for me, I absolutely needed something to be fired up about, right? And just going to AA meetings was not enough. And school definitely didn't do that for me. I needed something that gave me like a purpose, right? Something that I could strive for mastery in. And CrossFit was really perfect. And everybody knows it. It's, you can never master everything in CrossFit. Right. And so it was this really exciting thing that I looked forward to every single day. I started thinking about it hours a day, and if nothing else, it just gave me a very positive release to stop thinking about how miserable I was.
I love that. That's awesome. CrossFit for sure does that for so many people. Mm-hmm. And so many people have the same, a similar version of that story, which is why I love CrossFit and the CrossFit right. community so much.
Yeah, I mean, you hear it all the time. Even if it's someone very successful has a desk job, they're like, fuck, this makes me feel alive again. This makes me feel young. Mm-hmm. It's that way for everyone.
Yeah. And it kind of makes every other aspect of your life so much better. Like someone who has a desk job or feels unmotivated, go to CrossFit, get super motivated. I bet they feel like they're doing better at their job as well. Mm-hmm. I love that. My next question. So you find CrossFit, you love CrossFit. It gets you super fired up. I mean, I'm sure all the listeners can remember that like beginning stages of falling in love with CrossFit and just thinking about it all the time and watching videos and reading and learning. So you go on to basically reach the top of the CrossFit food chain. So you win the CrossFit Games twice on a team. And what was that experience like?
That was an incredible experience, for sure, one of the best of my life. And really, it the process of training with those guys and girls, right? The process of training for those 3 years that I went to the games was the most impactful part, right? Not just winning the games, but I learned how to work hard like none other, right? It really taught me how to set my mind to something and stick to something even when the times are rough and even when I don't want to go to the gym and that kind of thing. That's a very valuable lesson that I learned. The camaraderie that I found there was incredible, and it taught me how to be more of a team player and stuff like that. The experience of winning, I'm so grateful that, you know, all of our hard work paid off, you know. It was amazing. So, and it continues to give me a lot of confidence, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to reach the top of anything. Or like, I mean, CrossFit's interesting because you can't really ever master it. But, I mean, being at the top 2 years in a row is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Why did you stop doing competing in CrossFit? So what happened after the second time you won the games?
Well, actually, a little bit before that, this is 2013, right before the Open was going to start. I had been having a lot of, well, I've always had a lot of back pain, but then I couldn't feel like below my knees when I would wake up.
It's like not normal kind of back pain.
I literally couldn't feel below my knees at all. And yeah, my sciatic and my glutes constantly hurt. And so yeah, when I started getting the numbness, I'm like, fuck, I need to go to the doctor. So I go to the doctor. I go to a surgeon in Baton Rouge who used to work for the Saints, and he said that a condition I knew I had, which is called spondylolisthesis, had significantly worsened. And when he showed us the X-rays, I mean, it's just terrifying. It's like I'm gonna be paralyzed, right? It looks like that. And he said, "You need to quit CrossFit right now. I think you'll be able to move, you know, for the rest of your life, but you're going to be in pain. You're not going to be able to do what you do now, right? You need to stop right now because you're like one bad power clean away from being paralyzed potentially."
This is before the games.
Yes, this is before the Open.
And
everybody was already committed. No one could go individual at that point. So I'm like, fuck, if I don't go, no one goes, right?
So obviously you go.
Well, I saw a bunch of different surgeons. And actually I had decided I'm going to see one more person at the University of Utah. And if he says I can do it, I'm going to do it. If he says I can't, I won't. And he ended up saying that I can. And so I finished that was actually right before the fifth open workout. I remember that. And so I finished the open, and then we went on to regionals, went on to the games, won the games. And then right after that, I knew I was done with CrossFit.
So as you're going through this, like, open regionals games, what's like 1 to 10, how much pain are you in?
A constant 4 to 5. It was almost never excruciating. Only a couple occasions were like really, really bad where I couldn't move, but usually it was just a 4 or 5, but it was always there.
And even so, while you're working, it didn't get worse while you worked out?
It actually got a little bit better while I worked out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just like blood flowing through the area and stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. So did you, when you had back surgery and you're, you go into this, you know, like, this is like serious surgery. This isn't just like, I mean, you go and work on, get a shot on your shoulder and you have like a couple weeks or a couple months and you can recover. Did you have any inclination that you could, or a dream or hope that you could recover and be back to where you were at?
A little bit. Yeah, definitely. And talking to some physician's assistants and some of the specialists that I talked to even, were like, you could definitely get back to where you were, right? And you could do it safely. But the risk was, now that I have fused discs, right, where it used to be, like, I just have less discs to disperse all of that load. So all of my vertebrae are under more relative load now. So to do what I used to do, to train like I used to train, is just not safe for the rest of my back. And so it's very common for people to get one fusion done, and then years later they get another fusion. And that's people that are not doing CrossFit and definitely not competing in CrossFit. You know what I mean? So for me, there have definitely been a couple times where I'm like, fuck, I really want to get back into this. I was in the best shape of my entire life this year, right? But the volume, if you make me do 2 workouts in one day, I'm going to crumble, right? And it's just not worth it to me. It's not worth, you know, not being able to run around with my, you know, hopefully future kids, not being able to just stay active myself when I get older, just for like, what, 1 or 2 more years of competing. I feel... it's easier for me that we won to be like, I have fully fulfilled, you know, like, my potential in this sport. I feel like very comfortable and content with it.
So how do you now stay motivated to, is it, what's like that transition like, going from being like the elite, the super competitive, now transitioning, having back surgery, and going into this stage of training for general physical preparedness? Like, what is that transition like?
Well, at first, so this happened in December of 2013, I think it was. And I was, so right after the surgery, I couldn't really walk for more than 400 meters for about a month. Over the next like 3 months, I was very depressed. After the first couple weeks, I got really depressed, and it was a combination of just not being able to move, and I love to move around every day and stuff like that, as well as, who am I? You know, like, I've always been an athlete, and that was like, that was one of, if not the biggest thing I identified as, right? I'm an athlete. Yeah. And so I didn't have that anymore. And so I really wrestled with it. Like, what do people think of me? What am I worth? All of that kind of stuff. And I was very self-conscious about it. I would go and do these seminars for what was then Bruce Barbell. We would do these seminars, and I couldn't even barely walk, right? And I couldn't demo any of the movements and stuff like that. And I used to be so good at CrossFit, and now all of a sudden I can't do any of this. And it was extremely humbling.
I think that that's probably common in athletics in general, but also, I mean, you were really young when you won the CrossFit Games. So I said you were 22 and 23 or 21 and 22.
Yeah, one of those.
And then now you're still young, still like probably in what should be like the peak of your physical shape, and you're not competing. So, and that was such a large part of your identity. That transition, I could imagine, would make anybody feel depressed or questioning their worth. So how do you pull yourself out of that? I mean, how did you even end up coaching seminars when you couldn't even, like, I feel like most people would just retreat and not even participate at all. Like, what kept you motivated to be part of the community?
I felt like I had to be involved some way, and I was already coaching a little bit, and I felt like I was a good coach. I was coaching at LSU at the time, and so I definitely felt like a good coach, and so that was kind of a natural thing. Like, I suddenly switched my focus to being the best possible coach I can be, right? And best possible business owner that I can be. And it's been, yeah, it was a struggle for a while. Like, what am I going to do with my body physically? And it's still to this day, like, I haven't found that competitive edge again. And it's something I definitely strive for and want to find. But yeah, coaching just became that thing for me. And I dove in to learning more about coaching even more than I ever had.
I think that's really important for anybody who finds themselves in a situation where they can't do the things that they love to do, like they physically can't do it, like spending the exact same amount of time, like you still that time is there, and you've created time for fitness and for CrossFit, and now a large amount of time is freed up. So to fill it with something equally, even if it makes you feel uncomfortable and even if you're scared, to fill that time with the same thing, at least until you figure out where your direction is moving forward.
You have to be, I constantly have to be doing something, at least one thing in my life where I'm learning rapidly, right? Something that's really uncomfortable and that I'm constantly trying to learn, trying to catch up to, stuff like that. That's what keeps life exciting.
Right. I think that's something that's really hard for a lot of people. What advice would you give to somebody who's having a hard time making that leap from that feeling of discomfort to do something different? Like, they can't do what makes them feel comfortable and that thing that they were really good at. What piece of advice would you give to somebody who, to take that step over that feeling of discomfort to something maybe similar but a little bit new?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One is write down all of the worst case scenarios, right? What if you take this leap of faith? What, you know, maybe it's take a new job. Write down all of the worst case scenarios, and most of the time you'll realize that even the worst case scenarios either are super unlikely or they're not that bad. Okay. The second part, I totally lost my train of thought.
Advice for people to take a step over that feeling of discomfort, doing something new.
Right. Remind yourself, or think of it as a, it's not a permanent thing, right? Give yourself like 1 week on whatever activity or decision it is that you're going to make. And then after the week, you can reassess. And if it's not going well, you can go right back to what you were doing. If it's going well, which it usually will, keep going.
Right. I love that. It's not permanent. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so big. Like, it's nothing you do is permanent, really.
Right.
So you always are going to have an opportunity. It doesn't have to be this like huge commitment, or it doesn't have to become part of your identity right away. You have time. I love that. That's really good advice for sure. Do you think you're going to compete again ever?
I am pretty damn sure I'll never compete in CrossFit again. I think I'll definitely compete in something physical again for sure. I would be disappointed if I didn't.
So you think you'll search for some new activity. Do you have any ideas of what that would be? What?
For sure. Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah.
I've done jiu-jitsu before, and I love it physically. And then, as you know, like, it totally vibes with everything I'm about, like the martial art in general, right? It's a form of meditation. but also allows me to use my body as much as I possibly can, as well as my mind.
Right. So if anyone listening knows a jiu-jitsu gym in San Marcos, Texas, which is a little bit south of Austin, let us know.
Please.
So I'm going to switch it up a little bit before we wrap up. So you are this, like, it's, I think you can already tell from the things that we've talked about that you love challenging yourself. You love making yourself a little bit uncomfortable, learning. So you've now channeled all that energy that you channeled into being the best at CrossFit into being a pretty amazing business owner, leader. You've created this team of people that follow you that are just, or work with you. And it's pretty amazing to see. I only saw it like in the past year, but the growth in the past year is pretty amazing. When you, what was like your dream job growing up?
Honestly, I didn't think much about it. If I wanted to be a pro skateboarder, as soon as I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater, the blue game on Nintendo 64, that lasted for a couple years. I actually, probably for the majority of it, I wanted to be a professional baseball player.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I slowly realized that that was probably not going to happen. I thought I was probably going to become a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. It's super fun.
Did you ever imagine that your life would be the way that it is right now? I mean, for those who don't know, Michael is the CEO and owner of Brute Strength. He has multiple different programs going on. You can sign up for Brute Strength if you want to just look better, if you want to get stronger, if you want to be awesome at CrossFit. He has like some of the best in the game working with him to make these programs, these epic programs. People are seeing some amazing success. You're touching the lives of probably more people than you've ever imagined.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I didn't imagine it in my wildest dreams. I thought a businessman was a crook, right? Because I thought all they were doing was, I thought they were all selling people shit and they were just good at being quote unquote salesmen. And so when I thought of a businessman as a kid, I was like, there's no way I'll ever want to do that. And so we started Brute when I moved back to Utah. And I realized like I can affect way more people this way, right? I can inspire more people. I have this bigger platform to like reach people, inspire people, stuff like that. And it also allows me to, you know, I don't like to really take orders from anyone, and it allows me to, you know, have a lot of freedom and stuff like that. And we have an incredible team, you know, on our staff, and they make me better every single day.
I think that a lot of people would probably love to be in the kind of position that you're in. And I know and truly believe, like with 100% of myself, that anybody can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I really do believe that. If it's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's not what you want to do, then you won't be successful at it just trying. But I'm sure a lot of that came with that discomfort. And do you ever get afraid of your position?
I am in constant, I have constant fear about it. And I've basically just, and that fear looks like, oh my God, the numbers look different this month, we're going to fail. Or so-and-so had negative feedback, we're going to fail. Blah, 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 we're going to fail, we're going to fail. I've learned to navigate and still operate, for me at a high level while I have that fear. I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think it'll evolve, it'll change into fear about different stuff. It'll always be there. And so I've gotten more comfortable with being uncomfortable, if you will.
Right. It's kind of like CrossFit too, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like CrossFit, like being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yeah. So you are very disciplined in doing all these things that you're talking about, in being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Do you find things that help you, routines that help you do that, exercises that you do daily? Like, what is it that's keeping you? Is it just practice? Is it just time? Like, what is it that somebody who's like, I'm afraid to do that, or I'm like that whole fear of I'm going to fail, what keeps you from giving into that?
Oh, that was a bunch of questions.
Sorry. What keeps you from giving into that? What keeps you disciplined is my question.
What keeps me disciplined?
Yeah.
Well, so first you asked what keeps me from giving into the fear, the feeling of fear. And that is a few things. I've meditated for a long time, for 8 years on and off. And what that's done for me is it's taught me that I am not my feelings, right? So it lets me, so a lot of people, and me for sure, still to this day sometimes, when I start feeling afraid or sad or whatever, Michael is sad. Like all I can think about is the stories in my head, et cetera, et cetera. And what meditation has done for me is let me kind of take a step outside of my head and observe those thoughts and those feelings. And so when I'm feeling this kind of stuff around work, if I'm practicing meditation regularly, then I kind of have this bird's eye view. I have this awareness of, oh, look, there's fear. That's interesting. What's the fear about, right? And I can kind of dissect it, and it doesn't have to dictate how I act. The more disciplined I am with my morning routine.
Which is what?
Morning routine, meditation, Ramwad, journaling, and then reading. It takes about 2 hours. If I'm disciplined with that, and I'm also disciplined with how I spend my time at work, so not just checking email constantly or, you know, just being inefficient, right? If I batch my work appropriately and make sure I'm productive like that, then all of those feelings are lessened. I'm more confident, I feel more relaxed, all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure if that's a... that answer your
no, it no. That definitely does. What would you recommend to somebody who's never tried meditation before? What would be your recommendation to them?
I have two recommendations. One, definitely download the app Headspace. Some people that listen to us a lot are probably sick of that, but download the app Headspace. It's free for 10 days. If you don't like it, you only wasted a maximum of 100 minutes. The other thing that I would highly recommend, if you haven't heard this already, go listen to Sam Harris, How to Meditate. And it's a 26-minute YouTube. It's on YouTube. It's audio only, but he explains it really, really well. And after that 26 minutes, I would bet 90% of you are going to be feeling phenomenal. You're going to be feeling this new thing, this awareness, right? Maybe about your life, or maybe it's just kind of a calm space in your head.
I love that. How about for people that have a hard time getting into that routine or being disciplined with their time, what would you recommend for those people?
So I had this, if you listen to the podcast I did with Chris Powell, we talked about this. So Chris is the host of the TV show Extreme Weight Loss on ABC. And so he has these people that need to lose 200 pounds, 300 pounds, whatever. And they come onto the show and they're incredibly motivated. They feel like they have this second chance, highly motivated, and they want to do 100 things all at once, right? And that's like all of us. We hit some kind of pain point or maybe even rock bottom, and we are super, super motivated. So we want to do all of these changes at once. I would say, do one thing and do it every single day, right? Because if you try to do five things at once and then life gets in the way, as it always does, then you're going to, most people are going to slack off. They're going to start making excuses. And before long, you're not doing any of the five. one thing is manageable. So do the one thing that you think will make the biggest impact on your life and do that every single day. Make it a rule for yourself, no matter if you're traveling, if you're at home, whatever, one thing every single day.
Love it. And also another recommendation would be to get the book called The Perfect Day Formula. It's like just over 100 pages, written super easy. It has like a lot of really great strategies for how to create a routine. I know you've read it. Mm-hmm. It's a
great book.
It's a great book for sure. I think it's like $4 on audio, $4.99 or something like that. Definitely easy and quick read. I think that is all I have for today. Where can people find you, Michael?
I am at Michael Cazoux, C-A-Z-A-Y-O-U-X on Instagram. I don't use the Twitter very much. And then obviously you can find the team at brute.strength.
And sign up for the newsletter at
brutestrengthtraining.com. Thanks to everybody who signed up for the Brute Body Program. We're excited to get started with you guys. How about you?
What about me?
Where can they find you?
You can find me at Adi Zucker on Instagram, A-D-E-E-Z-U-K-I-E-R.
You can find me.
And you can find my team at Working Against Gravity, as well as sign up for our newsletter at www.workingagainstgravity.com.
Word.
Thanks for letting me interview you.